This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Happy after Pride.
Yes, wonderful.
We survived it. We all survived it.
Yes.
This is sort of the wrap-up show, and it's also Queer Music Heritage tonight.
Yes.
And also, you just came from an event.
I just came from the Baring James Gallery. The GLBT Community Center sponsored a sort of a commemoration of the Lawrence versus Texas settlement. 3 years ago this month, the Supreme Court freed us from being criminals for just being who we are. I got to meet John Lawrence and then their attorney, Mitchell
Patin.
Thank you. It was just wonderful. There were,
by the way, who are you?
I'm Jennifer Renee.
And I'm Jack Falinski.
And J.D. Doyle.
And, you know, I forget to say who we are, you know. And
you know, it's 3 years ago today.
Oh, it is today.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Well, I was mistaken by that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is wonderful.
Yes, actually, I was hoping for another Supreme Court decision today, the one about the redistricting in Texas.
Yes, the real freedom.
and so it may come out next Monday. It probably should come out next Monday. But the 3 years ago today, which was two days before Pride, in 3 years ago, that decision came out, and it was just an incredible thing because I went to that press conference that was at the community center, and I don't know if I've ever been at a bigger press conference because there was news coverage, news people from all over the world.
Absolutely.
That.
There was some of the people were talking about that tonight, remembering that day when for our community is the difference between, where the government came into our bedroom and can't come into our bedroom
well,
anymore.
Well, and so it voided the laws in like 11 states, I think it was. And actually, the law is still on the book here in Texas, and it probably will be a century before they ever take it off the books, but it's not enforceable.
Well, there's some stuff in our laws here in Texas, like spitting on the sidewalk, that, you know, they don't arrest anybody for that either.
So tonight, the second hour, we do Queer Music Heritage. The first hour, besides doing This Way Out, News Wrap, and the other segments in This Way Out, we don't have This Way Out, huh?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay, we're still working on it. So let's talk a little bit about Pride. I am into, for full disclosure, I am executive director of Pride Houston, and I am the only paid employee. So myself and about 150 other volunteers have been working on this event for almost a year. There are probably about 30 key volunteers that work year-round, and then as we get closer to the event, we have other people who join or get reactivated, and on the day of the event, there's probably a lot, there's a whole bunch more that just show up on the day of the event every year, and that's really important because those people are all of what we need, and the festival was probably double its size this year.
The festival is absolutely wonderful. I wanted to thank you for your Herculean effort in this. I know you have been working on this day and night for at least the last month.
Well, in reality, the festival committee was so organized that I probably spent the least amount of time working on the festival. Richard Proto and Peter Charvet did a fabulous job, them and their team of people. And there's a couple things I'm really proud about the festival, besides just being a festival and having all this wonderful entertainment. One is that the Bunnies on the Bayou committee, they sponsored a nonprofit tent.
That was
great.
And
that meant that nonprofits who were able to get their application in at time, paid a very, very low fee under what it actually cost to put the tent up and everything because of the grant. So we were able to be able to provide the space for these nonprofits so that they could recruit and they could publicize and get their word out.
Register voters.
All that type of stuff,
yes.
which was really great. The other thing that I was really proud of, and this is something that Eric Olenchek worked on with a grant from the Kellett Foundation, it was an air-conditioned history tent.
Yes.
And that was the items came from the MCCR Church archives. And from what I understand, it's like the first time this has ever been publicly displayed. And it was mostly, and I only spent about 10 minutes in it because I unfortunately just didn't have the time to do it. And it wasn't set up earlier. You know, I unfortunately wasn't able to spend a lot of time, and I would have loved to.
I was able to go and visit that before the gates actually opened, just beforehand, and to get a look. Some of the things in there I had never seen before. I didn't realize we had archives like that
organized
here in Houston. I did speak to several people from MCA that worked on it, and my kudos go out to them. They did a fabulous job, and it was air conditioned, you know.
Yeah. Yes.
Nothing else, you could learn a little bit and get out of the heat.
I'm very proud of Pride Houston that we do spend the money to try to make things work as best as possible. That we try not to cut the edges. We try to, you know, give a good festival. And I think we did that. I mean, we still got a long ways to grow to be in part of some of the other major cities. But in the past 2 years, we really put an effort to build this up. And there was a bunch of entertainment, which I'm sure that JD can comment about a little bit later. The festival went on from 2 to 8 p.m., and we were not exactly sure what the attendance was. We're still sort of counting those tickets. In fact, yesterday, we were all so burnt out, and most of us did yesterday was either talk or we went to the awards, the parade awards. And then today, the office was an absolute disaster because everything was just thrown there or left in the rental truck. And today we had a number of volunteers who showed up and really helped get the office back in shape. So the festival, from what I understand, and I know I'm sometimes a little bit too close to the trees, was an incredible success. I talked to lots of people in the nonprofit tent. I talked to some of the other vendors in there, and they were all seemed to be very happy.
And I can speak directly to the nonprofit tent because I was there from about noon till 7:30, and there was a steady stream of people. People were enjoying. People from all over the area. Some people outside of the state. It was wonderful to get and talk with them. They were so excited to be somewhere they could just be themselves, and it was just wonderful.
Well, let's take a little break and listen to news wrap, and then
we got to hear the whole thing because we technically can't chop it up tonight.
Okay.
So all of this way out will be next.
Okay. Let's listen to that.
Don't forget to come back later for Queer Music Heritage. I didn't get a chance to plug it. It's one of my songs I've been meaning to play shows. There'll be a heavy emphasis on historic gay pride songs, some I'm sure you've never heard, and, get this, a 100-year-old queer song.
Well, do we have enough time for you to tell us some about the entertainment at Pride?
Well, let's come back after This Way Out.
Okay.
And
see,
finish that.
You'll have
to
come back after
for.
This.
Yes.
You've got to come back after This Way Out to find out about the entertainment at Pride.
My mom kicked me out. Simple as that. It was pretty much like, you know, a teen coming into themselves and her not being able to deal and bear. So she just said, I'd rather have someone else deal with it and deal with the headache than me.
I can't file a missing person for 48 hours.
This is a minor.
He hasn't been home since 5 o'clock yesterday.
Any family problems? Drugs?
No.
Fighting?
No.
What's the name?
Eddie. Edward Gwen Arapo.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Restraint on gay bishops and a new female chief strain U.S. Anglican relations. Queer youth contend with mean streets and funding cuts. And the life and death of a girl like Gwen. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 24th, 2006. Several Christian denominations have been debating Holy Scripture and homosexuality, and it's been rough going almost everywhere. The 2.3 million member U.S. Episcopal Church, part of the Global Anglican Communion, held its general convention in Columbus, Ohio this week, where it elected a pro-LGBT woman as the communion's first female presiding bishop and refused to issue an outright ban on ordaining openly queer bishops. The final resolution on the subject did not declare a complete moratorium, something the church's more conservative members and branches of the Anglican Communion in many other countries had demanded. Outgoing Episcopal Primate Frank Griswold offered a carefully worded motion committing the church to exercise restraint by not consenting to the consecration of any candidate for the episcopate whose manner of life presents a challenge to the wider church and will lead to further strains. His proposal passed in the 300-member House of Bishops on a show of hands and was approved by lopsided margins by both clergy and lay delegates in the more than 800-member House of Deputies.
The Anglican Communion, a loose-knit group of 38 national churches representing 77 million people around the world, has been in crisis since 2003. That's when the U.S. Episcopal Church ordained partnered openly gay New Hampshire Bishop Gene Robinson, and Canadian Anglicans began blessing same-gender marriages. Robinson told the convention that he is not an abomination in the eyes of God. I desperately want to preserve this communion, he said, but I can't do so at the expense of my own integrity and that of my gay and lesbian brothers and sisters in Christ. Newly elected presiding Bishop Catherine Jeffords Shorey of the Nevada Diocese supported Robinson's elevation to bishop in 2003. Shorey told a CNN reporter this week that she does not believe homosexuality is a sin. I believe that God creates us with different gifts, she said. Each one of us comes into this world with a different collection of things that challenge us and things that give us joy and allow us to bless the world around us. Some people come into this world with affections ordered toward other people of the same gender, and some people come into this world with affections directed at people of the other gender. No doubt exacerbating increasing divisions within the communion, Shorey flaunted her feminist credentials by preaching in her first sermon as presiding bishop, Mother Jesus gives birth to a new creation, and you and I are his children. If we're going to keep on growing into Christ images for the world around us, we're going to have to give up fear. Shorey will be installed to her 9-year term in a November 4th ceremony in Washington, D.C.'s National Cathedral.
In the first major reaction by international Anglican primates soon after the convention ended, a dozen African archbishops suggested that they're preparing for a formal split. Addressing the U.S. Episcopal Church, the Council of Anglican Provinces of Africa, meeting in Uganda, issued a statement saying, "We have observed the commitment shown by your church to the full participation of people in same-gender sexual relationships in civic life, church life, and leadership. We have noted the many affirmations of this throughout the convention. As you know, our churches cannot reconcile this with the teaching on marriage set out in the Holy Scriptures and repeatedly affirmed throughout the Anglican Communion." They went on to offer a new home for conservative American Episcopalians upset by the direction of their church, a further signal that a split in the Anglican Communion may only be a matter of time. The Reverend Susan Russell, president of Integrity, an advocacy group for gay and lesbian Episcopalians, told the New York Times that we're being treated like bargaining chips in the game of Anglican politics.
Mainline Protestant groups, including U.S. Methodists and the country's largest Lutheran branch, have struggled for decades over the traditional Christian condemnation of homosexual acts, even as gays and lesbians have pushed for full inclusion in their churches. The Presbyterian Church USA decided during its National Assembly in Birmingham, Alabama this week to allow openly gay clergy, lay elders, and deacons to work with local congregations. The measure, approved by a 298-221 vote, maintains a Presbyterian Church law that says clergy and lay elders and deacons must limit sexual relations to heterosexual marriage, but also says that restriction is not essential. That will allow local congregations and regional presbyteries in the 2.3 million member church to exercise some flexibility when choosing clergy and lay officers, including non-celibate lesbian or gay candidates. Conservative factions are threatening to leave the Presbyterian Church over the move. According to a report in Pink News, 13 evangelical groups immediately issued a statement saying the new edict had thrown our denomination into crisis and that it marks a profound deviation from biblical requirements and we cannot accept support or tolerate it. The statement cryptically added, "We will take the steps necessary to be faithful to God."
The United Church of Christ announced this week that one of its regional units, the United Evangelical Church of Puerto Rico, has voted by a 3-1 margin to leave the denomination because of its liberal policies on homosexuality. The Reverend John Thomas, president of the 1.3 million member church, said that theological differences had increased during the past few years, especially regarding the membership and ministry of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender Christians. The final straw apparently came when the United Church of Christ annual synod endorsed same-gender marriage last year. Prior to the Puerto Rico decision, the denomination reported that 49 U.S. congregations had quit over the marriage equality issue, though dissenters count at least 77.
Latvia's Christian Democratic Party has called homosexuals degenerate. So it's no surprise that for the seventh time, the country's parliament has rejected a measure to protect gays and lesbians from discrimination. However, President Vaira V.K. Freiberga vetoed the decision this week, saying there is a logical reason to enact such legislation. That may be because it was stipulated as a condition for membership when the country joined the European Union in May 2004. There's no indication yet as to how the Latvian parliament will respond to the presidential veto.
A ruling party lawmaker in Bermuda said this week that she'll try again to pass a lesbi-gay anti-bias bill a month after a similar measure failed in the British territory's parliament. Renee Webb of the Progressive Labour Party said her proposed amendment to the territory's Human Rights Act of 1981 is supported by some members of her party and the opposition United Bermuda Party. She says she hopes to get a new vote on the issue in November. Lawmakers defeated Webb's bill in a voice vote last month, sparking a protest at the Capitol by some 300 demonstrators who criticized Parliament for not even debating the proposal. The amendment, which would outlaw discrimination based on sexual orientation, has drawn the most vocal opposition from religious groups. Premier Alex Scott has called it unnecessary, saying the Human Rights Act already covers all people in Bermuda. But he said he was open to a possible court ruling that gays and lesbians are not protected by the law. Dale Butler, Bermuda's Minister for Human Rights, said he would vote for the amendment if it comes up again, but didn't think it would pass because members of Parliament are afraid of voter backlash.
Members of a parliamentary committee in Jamaica have made it clear they will not decriminalize homosexuality in the proposed new Charter of Rights. But that didn't stop the National AIDS Committee from arguing before the committee this week that people most at risk of contracting HIV are forced underground by laws banning sex between consenting adult men. Homophobia and its pervasive anti-queer harassment and violence is deeply rooted in Jamaican culture. Those attitudes seem to be at least tacitly encouraged by the island nation's major religious institutions, which have staunchly opposed decriminalization.
And finally, tensions continue to fester over plans for the International World Pride Festival and Parade in Jerusalem this August. Leading Jewish, Christian, and Muslim clerics have repeatedly and vocally denounced it. Ibrahim Sarsour, an Arab-Israeli member of the Knesset, Israel's parliament, said this week that this attack is more venomous than the Zionist attack to make Jerusalem Jewish, and that if gays will dare approach Temple Mount during the Pride Parade, they will do so over our dead bodies. And while it's a trademark of holier-than-thou religious conservatives to express concern for children, another lawmaker in Israel has concerns about queer children. An international LGBT youth group is scheduled to visit the Knesset during World Pride to see how Israel's government works. But Otniel Schneller, an MK of the ruling Kadima Party, wants to prevent that. He sent a letter to Knesset Speaker Dalia Itzik this week, charging that a visit by the youth group would turn the building into Sodom and Gomorrah. Itzik promptly rejected Schneller's demand. A fellow Kadima Party MK, Ronit Tarosh, later told Israel Radio that, "These are children who could be mine or yours. I am absolutely stunned. Who are we talking about here? We're talking about human beings. If they want to visit me in the Knesset, they are more than welcome."
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 24th, 2006, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm John Beaupre.
A battling civil rights super lawyer brings the story of a murdered trans teen to the small screen with a view towards social change. Later in the program. Tens of thousands of runaway and throwaway children and teenagers are fending for themselves and sleeping on the streets in cities around the world. In the U.S., as many as half of them may identify as lesbian, gay, bi, or trans. Most escaped or were expelled from homophobic families. And many find that the same prejudice stands in the way of the basic community services they desperately need. Programs for LGBT homeless youth are on the mayor's chopping block in New York City. But these vulnerable kids are not fighting alone, as Leanne Stanky of Free Speech Radio News reports.
San Francisco, L.A., New York. These large cities, which have a reputation for tolerance, are often a destination for young lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth. Many teens arrive with a few belongings tossed into a bag after their parents discover their sexual identity. Bridget, a lesbian-identified, formerly homeless youth, was asked to leave her home when she was a preteen, when her mother found her kissing another young woman.
My mom kicked me out. Simple as that. It was pretty much like, you know, a teen coming into themselves and her not being able to deal and bear. So she just said, I'd rather have someone else deal with it and deal with the headache than me.
Carl Siciliano is the director of the Ali Forney Center, a small emergency housing program for LGBT youth aged 16 to 24. He says that Bridget's story is common.
Not only do they have no money and no food, but they have no wallets and no identification. A real common story that I hear is that the parents find out that the kid is gay, and that night they're told to put their belongings in a garbage bag and hit the streets.
For Bridget, homelessness necessitated that she enter the underground economy.
Survival of the fittest, I had a what you call hustle. You know, do all kinds of things. You know, get little rinky-dinky jobs, manipulate people, sometimes even escort, you know. You don't know. You're not old enough to have fit survival skills to be able to budget and things of that nature. You learn that as you get older. I'm 11, 13 years old, out on my own. You use what you know, which isn't very much at that age.
Bridget's story is echoed around the country. There are an estimated 7,000 homeless youth sleeping on the streets in New York and as many as 10,000 in Los Angeles County. A disproportionate number of these young people identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. New York City Councilperson Lou Fidler is fighting to provide safe housing and queer-friendly services for this underrepresented group.
When you analyze the number of kids who are sleeping on the street of the city of New York, estimates run as high as 50% coming from that community.
According to Fidler, chair of the Youth Services Committee, statistics regarding who is sleeping in shelter beds indicate that LGBT youth are afraid to stay at large shelters like Covenant House, where homophobia is rampant.
The single provider of shelter beds for runaway and homeless youth in the city of New York only estimates that 3% of their population is LGBT, which indicates that they're clearly missing the mark or that the LGBT community doesn't feel comfortable at that provider.
Kate Barnhart is the manager of Sylvia's Place, a 10-bed emergency facility in Midtown Manhattan serving homeless LGBT youth. Many young people find their way to Sylvia's Place after a disturbing stay at Covenant House.
Well, a lot of the young people who come here come in with horror stories from Covenant House of being verbally or physically harassed by both peers and staff. I've had one young man who showed up here black and blue from head to toe because he had been beaten up and the staff had not intervened.
Bridget agrees. She experienced both physical and verbal harassment during her brief stay at Covenant House.
When I've had people sit there and like threaten to throw blow dryers in the shower when I was taking a shower, I've had people put urine and bleach in my shampoo. I've had people rip up my clothes. I've had people sit there and like wait for me to come home from work and like, because I would usually come home like around 10, 11 o'clock, wait for me outside, and like throw cigarettes at me.
Many queer youths say they'd rather spend the night on the street than go back to Covenant House, which is why Councilperson Fiddler is lobbying for the city to continue providing for this population. At present, the mayor has eliminated $1.2 million that was earmarked for homeless LGBT youth from his proposed 2007 budget. Fiddler would like to see these funds restored, and he's also seeking an additional $1.2 million for services provided by centers like Ali Fournay. These services are effective but costly, which is why Fiddler and his colleagues are asking not only to restore the funding, but to add an increase. The budget is being evaluated now and is expected to be finalized on July 1st. I'm Leanne Stanky in New York.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Are you signed up for our emailed This Way Out updates? We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming program features and dishing some behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show. We also send out weekly email messages describing the specific content of each upcoming program. Just email tworadio@aol.com to get one or both of these messages delivered to your email inbox. And be assured that we don't share, sell, or otherwise provide your email address or anything else about you to anyone, and we never will. Again, to receive the occasional This Way Out updates and or our weekly program information messages, ask for one or both by name when you email tworadio@aol.com.
Should die tonight, you know I won't die blue. I've had so much love in my life. I've had you. Never be denied. Oh, we had to fight for it. Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
A Girl Like Me, the Gwen Araujo story, recently began a run on North America's Lifetime cable channel. This Way Out's Steve Pride says it's a very special movie starring relative newcomer J.D. Pardo as Gwen and Academy Award-winning actress Mercedes Rule as her mother, Sylvia.
Is everything all right?
Yeah, I still have some money left.
No, I mean with Eddie.
Eddie?
I asked why he wore the dress.
God, is this about last night?
He said he wants to be a girl.
He's 7 years old, Angie. For God's sake, he's a kid. All kids do silly things like that.
Warming up now. I think he needs help.
With what? With baseball?
This isn't about sports.
Look, don't.
Don't let anyone take you out.
Eddie is the best thing that ever happened to me.
I'm not saying he's bad. I'm saying he's different.
The story of Gwen Araujo's life and murder was brought to the screen by attorney Gloria Allred, who took the project to Lifetime and served as the film's executive producer. As Sylvia Araujo's attorney during the two murder trials, it's a story and family she cares about.
Gwen was a young person who felt that she was a female trapped in a man's body, and she didn't want to live a lie. She wanted to be able to be honest about who she perceived herself to be.
Will you talk to me?
You don't want to talk.
I'm asking.
But you don't. I see you working so hard to make us like everybody else.
No, to make you happy.
I hate my life, Mom. I hate it every single day.
Don't say that.
But there's something wrong with me.
There is nothing wrong with you.
You see? I can't hide it no matter how hard I try. It's like everybody knows, so I'm not going to hide anymore just to be what you want to make me.
It's not what I want to make you. God made you.
If God made me, then God just saying it.
She expressed her feelings to her family, And her mom and her family accepted that she self-identified as a woman. And they supported her. They continued to love her through her dressing as a female and through her beginning to call herself Gwen instead of Eddie Arahu Jr., which was the name given to her when she was born. She was searching for love and acceptance, as many teenagers are. Unfortunately, that search and her life ended on October 3rd, 2002. That night, at the age of 17, she put on a stylish denim skirt. She went to a party just blocks away from her home, and then she never returned. Her mother was very, very worried about her because it was unlike her not to call, not to return.
I can't file a missing person for 48 hours.
This is a minor.
She hasn't been home since 5 o'clock yesterday.
Any family problems? Drugs?
No.
Fighting?
No.
What's the name?
Eddie. Edward Gwen Arapo.
Male or female?
Female.
She was born male.
Look, with all due respect, we get these cases, kids like this, they have trouble, they run away.
She didn't run away.
Ultimately, it was found that she had been brutally killed by individuals who decided that she would pay the ultimate price for what they believed was her deception. According to the testimony of one of those individuals, when he and three other young men at the party learned to a certainty that the pretty girl with whom two of them had recently had sex had male genitalia, then Gwen was slapped, kneed, choked, and hit with a can and a skillet, and a rope was tied around her neck. She was strangled, and then the young men took her body and drove her 150 miles away to the foothills of the Sierra Nevada mountains and buried her in a shallow grave. The funeral was attended by over 1,000 people from the Latino working class community, and also media from around the country came to cover it. The church was filled to overflowing. I remember also that there were students from the local high school who had just completed giving the play about Matthew Shepard. They came in angels outfits, and they formed an aisle so that the coffin carried by the family and others could pass through. And of course, their wings from the angel costumes blocked some of the protesters who came to the funeral. And that was a beautiful sight that I'll never forget. I also remember there were police and SWAT teams on the rooftops at the church and the surrounding area because of threats and protests. Gwen's mother, Sylvia, honored Gwen by having her dressed the way she would have wanted, in a skirt, a blouse, and makeup.
We're here today to say goodbye to my daughter, Gwen. She was just a girl, but I think that she lived life more than most of us. We didn't always accept her, but she was very patient, and in time she taught us how. She used to say, I love you too much. I know that she loved us more than we deserved.
Later, Sylvia had her child's name legally changed to Gwen. Gwen had a right to be who she was. She had no duty to live a lie to conform to someone else's standards. Unfortunately, the honesty and courage that she displayed cost her her life. The district attorney charged the men not only with murder, but also with a hate crime. The killer's strategy during the first trial, which began in May 2004, was thought by many to be a so-called gay panic or trans panic defense. Previously, two of the defendants had had sex with her, allegedly thinking at the time that they were having anal sex with a girl. Defense attorneys claimed that their clients went into an alcohol and drug-fueled, quote, shock and panic, end quote, when they realized that Gwen had the anatomy of a male. The jury deliberation in the first trial lasted almost 3 weeks. Then on June 22, 2004, the jury announced that they were deadlocked, but not because the gay or trans panic argument worked. The DA indicated that the entire jury voted in favor of a murder conviction for the three men, but they were deadlocked over whether it was first or second degree murder, and the DA immediately announced that the case would be tried again. The good news was that the jury didn't buy the gay or trans panic argument. They felt it was murder. They refused to come back with a verdict of manslaughter or acquittal. In the retrial of the three young men that was conducted in 2005, there was 3 months of testimony after which the jury found two of the men guilty of second-degree murder in the death of Gwen Arahu. Their names were Michael William Magidson and Jose Antonio Merrill. The jury deadlocked on the third defendant, Jason Casares, and didn't find the hate crime allegation to be true as to any of the defendants. On December 16, 2005, Jason Casares entered a plea of no contest to voluntary manslaughter.
Attorney, author, and civil rights activist Gloria Allred knows that one film will not change the world. For that, she needs you.
each of us in our own way, Steve, if we decide, or I should say when we decide, that we want to make the world a better place, can do that. I begin my book, Fight Back and Win, My 30-Year Fight Against Injustice, with a quote from Mahatma Gandhi, "You must be the change you wish to see in the world." And that's what I believe.
This has been a conversation with Gloria Allred, Sylvia Arahu's attorney, and the executive producer of A Girl Like Me, The Gwen Arahu Story. Currently, in the California legislature is AB 1160, the Gwen Arahu Justice for Victims Act, which would amend jury instructions to state that the use of so-called panic defenses is inconsistent with California's comprehensive hate crimes law. For more information on A Girl Like Me and other films of LGBT interest, drop by prideonscreen.com. For more information on Gwen Arahu, pick up Gloria Allred's new book, Fight Back and Win, My 30-Year Fight Against Injustice and How You Can Win Your Own Battles. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
So Grim Reaper, here is the harvest. If I should die tonight, I say I'm going down easy. If I should die tonight,
thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, John Beaupre, Rex Walkner, Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Leon Stanky, and Steve Pride contributed program material with a special thanks to Free Speech Radio News. Sapphire performed some of the music you heard from her album Ain't Gonna Hush, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can now listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. Click on the Features link on their front page. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to our website to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special LGBT history, music, and culture CD thank you gifts. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on CJSR Edmonton, Alberta, KHSU Arcata, California, Trans FM Broward County, Florida, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
We are going to continue our wrap-up of Pride, and I'm pretty close to it. So, JD, tell us a little bit about the music. What do you think?
The festival, I was very pleased with the festival.
I am sorry.
A little technical interruption here in the studio. I was very pleased with the festival. It's very well run. Just like last year, I had no lack of confidence that it wouldn't go very smoothly. The quality of the artists was very good. Unfortunately, one of the three GOBT artists was not able to make it due to some flight arrangement problems.
Uh-huh.
That was KJ Dennard, and I'm sure they'll try and bring her next year. She's an excellent sort of a jazz artist, and we played quite a bit of her music in the weeks leading up to Pride. But did you get to see Dylan Rice, and he brought his band from Chicago. Excellent, just excellent. He won the Out Music Award 2 years ago for debut album Male, and he played a lot of new stuff, which I took to right away, which is a good sign if you hear the new stuff and you like it right away. The other artist, special artist they brought in was Casey Stratton, and he was good. He's kind of a sort of, he played keyboards,
kind of had a ethereal sound to it. Good performer. The crowd liked him a lot. And then Taylor Dane was the diva. And then I left.
Okay. What about the community stage?
The community stage, I didn't get over there. I was planted firmly at the main stage taking pictures.
Okay. And I couldn't stay there because I had other duties, so I didn't get to see everything in the entertainment. Then the parade happened, and everything went incredibly well scheduled. I mean, everybody was there. All the politicians got there on time.
Start on time, end on time?
It actually started a minute early.
Ah.
And we moved it on down, and it was actually funny. Peter Brown wasn't there, but his car, basically they have a choice. If you're not there on time, your car can go, or we pull it out of the side and you wait till the end of the parade.
And Peter Brown is?
Peter Brown is city council person at large. And so his car went, and he went running down after his car when he finally got there. So we can't hold up the parade. We just can't hold, So, and the mayor, of course, was there, as usual, Mayor White. And he walked down, and Anise Parker was there.
He likes to walk the parade, doesn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he does.
I think that's nice.
Yes, he does. What is interesting is that we have at 11 a.m., we have for the key volunteers, we have this brunch, and I sort of call it the Last Supper. And we all sort of get together and do a little pep talk type of thing. And we usually have one guest speaker. And in the past, it's been, Ray Hill, of course. And last year it was Phyllis Fry. And one year we had Larry Bonnerese, who works for the mayor in New Orleans.
Right.
And used to live here and helped to do the parade for a number of years. Well, this year we invited Anise Parker. And I was just wondering, and I think the world of Anise, but I was wondering how her speech can top other people's speeches. But basically she came up and she thanked all the volunteers and, pointed out to them how important the parade is for people who've never seen it before, people coming out of just getting into the community and stuff like that. It was just wonderful to sort of do a cheer, rally up the troops before they worked all day, because after that, pretty much, we're on our feet for the rest of the day. And at 5 p.m., and this is sort of behind the scenes, we actually have one of our sponsors gives us burritos. So, and the nice thing about that is you can eat it while you're working. It's almost like having a feed bag in a sense.
You can have this, but you have to stand.
Right. Right. Because
and walk and talk.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we pretty much do work from then on. And, moving the parade out, keeping it in order, something.
I was over there the Friday before at Pride Office, and like there were three offices full of people working very hard.
I am beside myself, and this has actually been the 25th parade I've been part of as
and
a volunteer.
How old are you?
I am 52 years old. But in Pride years, I'm about 300.
Yes, indeed.
And now I work full time for Pride, but it was just unbelievable. We have this office that's it's in a little bit older building, but it's a very good, well constructed building, and we have about 1,700 square feet of space, which is just amazing because it's more than double what we had last year. The board felt that this is what we need, but we must have had about 10 people to 15 people working on Friday, Thursday, Wednesday, doing certain things and getting last-minute preparations. These people basically took time off from work, vacation time, comp time, because they were so dedicated to both the parade and the festival. The festival people, a lot of them, got almost no sleep in the last couple days. And a lot of this is because we never did the festival before. The parade, even though the parade, we know a lot of this stuff, things do change. And then, as much as we plan, there's still those things that change at the last minute. For example, we thought we ordered plenty of ice, and when you're outside all day long, ice is an incredibly important thing, and somehow ice didn't get to the parade area for the volunteers, so somehow we got ice at the last minute. All of our banner carriers didn't show up, so we made do with who we had, and
drafted people.
Well, actually it was really neat when I explained the problem to some of the volunteers. They went out to the crowd to try to find people. So it's just an amazing thing that all the volunteers volunteers that work and the committee chairs that put into this event. I just can't say enough of the people who have the do the hard work and have the passion for doing this. And you know, I get a lot of credit.
This just doesn't start 2 weeks before the parade.
No, no. And I get a lot of credit for this, but in reality, it is the it's so much of what the organization does. And I don't know if you all saw the Chronicle on Saturday, if you're an avid reader like I am.
Oh, that editorial?
The editorial.
Oh, it was wonderful.
It's entitled, the editorial from the Chronicle is, actually, I'm on the wrong story here. This is the story about, the story I'm looking, here it is. The editorial's entitled City of Tolerance. And basically it talks about, you know, it's a 28th Gay Pride, well, they call it Gay Pride Week, but we know it's more than that. But it talks about the fact that both Anise Parker and Sue Lovell have been elected citywide because they were good people. You know, they were good people, and not just because they're GLBT. And I got a little quote in here, but the last two sentences I want to read is fitting that Houston's highest elected official, Mayor Bill White, will be walking the parade route on Westheimer between Woodhead and Whitney tonight, a tradition begin with his predecessor, Lee Brown. To paraphrase the slogan of this year's event, Houstonians should say it out loud that we are proud of the contributions of our gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender residents. This is just incredible that the Chronicle would do an editorial supporting and endorsing the Pride Parade and basically patting our community on the back.
It's the same Chronicle that years ago endorsed Louis Welsh.
Yes, and it's a Chronicle that also endorsed George Bush for re-election.
Well,
so it's not perfect. But
that's not, it's not local politics.
Yes, yes. So I am just, you know, beside myself on that. And the Chronicle gave us incredible coverage, too. I didn't get to see all the TV coverage. So, of course, KPFT does wonderful things, too. And we have this forum here on Queer Voices and After Hours to be able to talk up our stuff. Shall we take a little musical break?
Yeah, I wanted to slip in a song by an artist I really like called Christopher Dahlman. This CD called Face the Light came out in 2004, and it's my favorite CD of that whole year, and I listen to a lot of CDs. And the reason I'm mentioning that tonight, he's coming to town this Sunday for a house concert, and that's one of the most special ways to see an artist, is in an intimate setting like that. If people are interested after they hear the song, they could email me at qmheritage@aol.com, and I can email them back the information on the house concert. But let's enjoy Christopher Dahlman.
He looks just like Disneyland. He moves just like palm trees fall. He's got diamonds in his hand. He's got scrapes on both of his knees. He's eager to please. He is your big secret. He's got me rooting through your trunk wall. Is he the reason for this life jacket? Is he the reason that this ship sunk? Forward, written in, shaky, faded ink. I bet the drapes were pink in that old motel room. Forward, watch my stomach sink or swim. How could you follow him to that old motel room? Some days I feel 12 years old. Some days I'm sliding toward the grave wall. Sometimes I can take this, but other times I wanna give you back what you gave. Forward, written in a shaky, faded ink. I bet the drapes were pink in that old motel room. Forward, written where I ain't supposed to see, and all my friends agree that you must be the devil.
justify this geography. But show me where we went wrong on the map. And I try to stand tall. I try to think of anything else at all. But it's hard to move on with this knife in my back. It's hard to move on with this knife in my back. It's hard to move on with this knife in my back.
Again, that was just a taste of the music of Christopher Dolman from his wonderful album, Face the Light. People who want information on his house concert, please email me at qmheritage@aol.com. And Queer Music Heritage is coming up in about 10 minutes with the songs I've been meaning to play and some special gay pride music.
What are some of the songs you've been meaning to play?
I have a couple gay pride songs from 1976, 1977 that are very historical. And in fact, I got the writer of one of those songs to talk about how that song evolved, how it was needed for a certain use in New York City for a pride event there. How they put it to use and threw it together. And remember, this was 1976 they were doing this. And it became a record. And he tells this story. In fact, I met the writer in New York, Bill, when I was there a couple weeks ago. Did the interview earlier, but I met him for lunch in New York.
What's the name of it?
It's called Come Out, Come Out.
How clever.
So, as we sort of wrap up Pride, and I'm sure some people are probably tired of hearing it. I'm just tired. and then there was a lot of other events that happened during June that the Gay Men's Chorus did, and I didn't get to see it, but I wish I did.
In the Women's Chorus.
Yes,
women's
I heard it.
Too.
And a number of other events. We had a great kickoff party. We have this group called Friends of Pride, who are individual supporters of Pride. We had a really nice event at the Museum of Contemporary Craft, wine tasting party. And it's just amazing because this is what I work on all year round.
Did you talk about the history tent yet?
Yes, we did. In fact, maybe you want to add a comment on that.
Oh, I was very impressed with that. I could have spent the rest of the day just in that tent looking at the magazines and books, and you know, many of the magazines I'd seen before, maybe not those issues of them, but I was familiar with them. Some I'd never heard of and wanted to just devour them. That's pure history there, and I understand just a fraction of what they have at their library, and it is available for researchers.
Yeah, I got to talk to... Well, I try to go around in the early part of the day to talk to everybody, every nonprofit booth and some of the for-profit booths and the magazines and newspapers, and we seem to have a really good reaction. And John Kellett, who is the funder of the history, you know, pay for putting the tent and the air conditioning up, he was just ecstatic, so I'm real happy about that.
There was so much there. It was very, very impressive.
Where can we find this museum stuff?
At MCC Resurrection. I can't speak for their hours or
I don't think that stuff is available to view. Is it?
The director told me you could, you know, make arrangements to research. And you can't check stuff out, but
right,
you can research.
Okay. I'm glad we got to get it out, and maybe this will, you know, get it out more.
Hope so.
I hope so, too. I mean, I hope we can do this again next year.
Absolutely.
And you were going to say that when you told us one of the songs that you're playing in Queer Marriage. What else did you have that you were interested in?
There's a 100-year-old song.
A 100-year-old song?
From 1906. And I've had it 2 or 3 years, and I kind of been saving it. Right. So I could just say I'm playing a 100-year-old queer song.
You got it off a wax cylinder?
No. I don't have the original recording. It was sent to me, but it's by an artist who was very prolific in those decades. He recorded like 4,000 or 5,000 songs. His name's Billy Murray, who I had not heard of before I started researching him, but he was like the Bing Crosby of his day. And this is a song called How'd You Like to Spoon With Me? And it was written by Jerome Kern. You probably have heard of him.
Yes.
And it was written in 1904. It was a hit for a female singer a year later, and then in 1906, Billy Murray recorded it. And again, in those days, they didn't care about pronouns. That wasn't in people's consciousness. You just sang the song, and you know, they didn't worry about it. You know, in the past, I've played Bing Crosby singing "Ain't No Sweet Man Worth the Salt of My Tears," which is amusing to hear.
Yes, it is.
we are, of course, now we sort of change focus. We've been, the shows have been very much based on what's happening during Pride. So
right, I've been playing Pride songs for the last 6 weeks. Yes. I'm glad that's over.
Well, we're gearing towards, back to the regular stuff that happens.
Right, I've got a lot of new artists I want to play that I've, met at the Out Music Awards in New York, CDs I've brought back, ones I've been saving.
Yeah, well, quickly, is there anything at the Out Music Awards? We haven't heard a report from you on that.
That's my July show.
Give us a little hint, a little tease for everybody out there.
See, these names are not names probably our listeners would know, these artists. But, obviously they're very talented. They should be known. They do some honorary awards. They give the typical Grammy-type categories, female, male, debut female, debut male, songwriter. One thing interesting this year is that three of the main awards were won by classical artists, and that's never happened. I thought, well, that's pretty cool.
That is. In fact, I can't remember that ever happening.
The debut female category, which is not by genre, it's just debut female, won by an opera soprano.
Amazing.
And I got to see her. Her name is Melissa Fogarty. I got to see her perform, and though that's not a genre I gravitate towards, I was impressed. She was excellent.
Well, what else do we have coming up?
Well, I don't know. I've sort of been out of the loop the past month or so.
I guess you have.
But, we're always interested if you have some ideas of people we should interview or organizations we should talk about. You can email me, jack@queervoices.org. And also, we need to get our website up. And I'm sure lots of other people said that.
Need to get the other emails working on the website.
Yes, well, and I'm guilty of that. So now that I have some time to focus on it, I will. There really isn't much of a website, queervoices.org. So we need to work on that to get it up so that we can put our shows, what we're going to have on, who we're talking to, links to where you can get more information on. But if you have some interest in a certain organization or somebody that you think might be interesting to talk to on the radio, you can email me, jack@queervoices.org, and we will definitely look into
it. Or an event or something your organization is doing, a fundraising event, a show, whatever.
Well, and we like to gear more towards local.
Yes, yes.
And people who work in or volunteer in local GLBT organizations, because that's what our show is about. Although sometimes we sort of expand a little bit. Joan sort of goes out of the, envelope a little bit, and we all do.
Yep. Well, one of the things I was just going to say, I asked John Lawrence and Mitchell to come on the show and talk to us about how the Lawrence decision impacted here 3 years later.
I'd like to hear how it impacted their personal lives, all three of them.
Well, I didn't get a chance to ask, and so I'm sort of looking forward to that show, so I get to ask some of those questions I didn't get a chance to. Sometime at a reception, you don't get to do it.
Well, in reality, is that this decision will be years and years before a lot of the stuff is felt. I mean, even though we weren't prosecuted under the sodomy law for the most part, it still was on the books.
It was a tool against us.
Yes, absolutely. And, just as they're trying to use the gay marriage issue against us, in the next generation, that will not be an issue.
Well, what was it, 25 years ago or so when the city had a mask law? And for transgender people, all you just putting on anything other than your gender sexually, you could get arrested for it. Or your buttons buttoning on the wrong side.
And I believe in the 60s, you couldn't perform drag.
No, it was illegal.
Because you couldn't wear the costume.
You could, but you could get arrested for it.
Yes,
and they would
come
into our clubs and arrest us.
Well, one of the things was Phyllis Fry being a grand marshal at the parade.
It's way overdue.
Well, and how that happens is people nominate. Anybody can, and it happens around the beginning of the year. And the great thing was it was voted on by the community.
Yes, that was what was so wonderful.
I understand that HERA, Houston Equal Rights Alliance, got about 2,000 voter IDs. They either registered voters or they talked to them to join the list so that they can be informed on future elections and to get out there and vote.
Yeah, I saw their booth.
So, they basically had a booth inside and outside the festival so that they could not only talk to people inside, but along the parade route.
And the political caucus, the Houston GLBT political caucus, just across the aisle from them, we were able to get over 100 between
identifying them, new voters, or getting people signed up. And, you know, it was just a matter of asking, are you registered to vote? They say, well, no, you know.
My name was plastered all over the Chronicle the past week, and probably too much, but Maria Gonzalez was interviewed on Sunday with the Post-Pride coverage, and you look it up on Cron.com. It was a fabulous interview.
Yes, it was.
Very proud of her. So as we end the show, you're listening to KPFT Houston at 90.1 and 89.5 in Houston. Is about time to go to Queer Music Heritage.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt.
Hey, sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT, and I'm J.D. Doyle. From time to time on Queer Music Heritage, I like to feature songs that don't really fit into any theme. So this is another one of my Songs I've Been Meaning to Play shows. And I'm going to kind of run amok, covering many, many types of music from all over the world. And since it's June, this show will also feature some gay pride songs. And the opening song definitely fits that description. And it has an interesting story. The song is called Gay, and is by an act called the Billy Burke Estate, in honor of the actress who played the Good Witch in The Wizard of Oz. It's from a 2005 album called Give It All Away. I found that song delightful, so I contacted the singer and writer, Andy Leota, and got a very nice email back. He wrote me that he was glad I liked the song, but he wasn't actually a gay artist. He went on to say, "So how does a straight songwriter come to write a song proclaiming I'm gay, you might ask?" I don't really have an answer, as it was not a planned thing. The song pretty much wrote itself. Though not autobiographical, I found the song to be one of the most honest and direct things I've written. I consider coming out as a gay man in the U.S. as about as courageous an act as there is, and the song is a celebration of that courage. I anticipated there could be some awkward moments when the is he or isn't he issue is inevitably raised, but ended up figuring my sexual orientation was pretty much irrelevant to the virtues of the song. Now isn't that refreshing? Next up is a song that one of my favorite acts, Romanowski and Phillips, recorded, one of the very few they did not write on their own. I've tracked down the original version. The songwriter was Larry Havelock, a Minneapolis folk singer, and it appeared on a 1985 cassette tape of his called Bye Now, Gay Later, and Bye was spelled B-I. Here's his song, Must Have Been Drunk.
Well, I woke up in the morning with you wrapped inside my arms. As 9 to 10 got cold, so we just snuggled to keep warm. Now, I must admit, you had started feeling pretty good. And I was feeling you a little better than I should. Must have been drunk for us to carry on this way. You don't talk like Mr. Rogers, I don't look like Doris Day. Now maybe it's the wine and weed that made us act so queer. Or maybe homosexuals have bottled up this beer. Well, my girlfriend, she's suspicious. She must know there's something wrong. Cause ever since that night, my need for her is twice as strong. And we've avoided sleeping out our wrestling since then. But deep inside, I feel this need to hold you once again. Must have been drunk for us to carry on this way. We don't have the right equipment for the games we seem to play. Now maybe it's the wine and weed made us act so queer. Or maybe homosexuals have bottled up this beer. Now you have long been married and you've got a couple kids. And you swear your wife feels better than your buddies ever did. But me, I found the flaw in our old denial game. I've slept with men cold sober and it feels good just the same. Must have been drunk for us to carry on this way. I swear God wouldn't let a former altar boy behave. No way. Now maybe it's the wine and weed that made us act so queer. Or maybe homosexuals have bottled up this beer. Or maybe homosexuals have bottled up this beer.
Ron Romanowski and Paul Phillips recorded that song in 1986 on their Trouble in Paradise album. And I interviewed them for my May of 2003 show. I was very pleased when Ron Romanowski recently sent me two new songs. Alas, one is only for my internet audience, but the other is a new gay marriage song that's not been released yet, called The Sanctity of Marriage.
In order to protect the sanctity of marriage, is it enough to keep the queers from getting hitched? Stopping there just puts the proverbial horse behind the carriage. Why not attack the problem at its very source? It's time to outlaw divorce. That's right, if we can't get married, you can't get divorced. If gay people can't tie the knot, straight folks have got to stay together till death do them part. No matter how miserable they are. No more celebrities like Elizabeth Taylor, with more ex-husbands than anyone can recall. No more annulments coming from the Church of Rome. No more divorce attorneys getting filthy rich. No more relief from the 7-year itch. Because if we can't get married, you can't get divorced. If gay people can't tie the knot, straight folks have got to stay together, if only for the kids. No matter how bad their marriage is, you'll say your vows, they'll throw some rice, all dressed up and looking nice. And now guess what? You're stuck for life. Woman and husband, man and wife. Protect the sanctity of holy matrimony. Amend the Constitution to reflect this little change. No more second chances, no more alimony. If marriage needs defending as they claim, take another look at who's to blame. If we can't get married, you can't get divorced. If gay people can't tie the knot, straight folks have got to stay together, whatever it takes. The sanctity of marriage is at stake.
Okay, here comes the Gay Pride section of the show, and I've uncovered some historic obscurities. The first is from 1977 and is by Bobby Sanders, and you can tell right away that he's responding to Anita Bryant. It's a 45 RPM recording on the label Equal Rights Records, and he credited it as sung by the International Gay Society. You can't get much more queer than this record. It's called Stand Up for Your Rights.
Stand up, stand up, stand up.
Yes, we have.
Stand up for his rights.
Girl, why don't you mind your own business and eat your oranges? We don't need nobody trying to run our life. We gotta keep on fighting. Shouldn't have to.
We got rights.
Got rights, yeah.
We got to fight.
Ooh, yeah. We got to fight for.
We got rights.
Got rights, yes we have.
We got to fight
for our free time. Oh yeah.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stand up.
International Gay Society and Stand Up for Your Rights. And the year before, 1976, another very early Gay Pride 45 was produced. It's called Come Out, Come Out, and was by New Freedom. Now, for years in my collection, all I had was a very ragged copy of this record. Definitely not good enough to play on the air. So I went hunting on the net for a better one and finally searched on the name of one of the writers, Nick Curto. Not only did I find him, but he sent me a new copy of the record and gave me this very interesting story of the history of that song.
Well, Come Out was a very special time in my life doing that song because I've been a gay activist in New York City for about 4 or 5 years, really, really going strong. And I was meeting amazing people in the organizations with that. And for years, some of the friends that were other gay activists wanted to communicate with the whole community and tell them what new organizations and services that were now available to the gay community, which were never available before. This was all brand new. Everything was just bursting. And they had gone to public television, Channel 13 here in New York, and said, is there any way we could get airtime so that we could tell the community what was going on? And they had been doing this for months and months. Then I got a call that said, Nick, we did it. They've agreed to, I believe it was 4 live hours of airtime where we could present different organizations, people from different services, have a little bit of entertainment. And this was unprecedented. No one has ever done this before. I was jumping up and down. This was a dream that had suddenly come true. And they said, Nick, you're a graphic artist. Would you do a logo so when we go in and out of the program for all these hours, they would see this, an identification logo? I said, of course, I'm honored to do that. And I did. I came up with something and brought it to a meeting. They loved it. And then I said, what else are you doing visually for these? That's a long time on TV. They said, we'll be answering the phone, taking calls from the listeners and viewers. We'll be doing talking heads, people of different organizations. And I said, well, that sounds great, but you need something more visual also. I just got a new camera. It was a Super 8 movie camera in those days, Super 8 sound. And I said, why don't I make a short movie showing gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people of different ages holding hands, walking around New York City in an affectionate way, kissing, holding each other, and we'll put that on as a short, maybe 30-second or 60-second when we go in and out of the program. And they said, wow, that's a great idea. Can you do it? I said, let me try. I put the word out, and I rounded up people that would fit that description. And we filmed, I think it was 2 weeks, in and out, different places in New York. I edited it, brought it to them, and they were blown away. And they said, okay, now, Nick, what are you going to do for the soundtrack? And I went, I didn't think of that yet because I've been so busy with the visuals. They said, will you think about that and maybe come up with something or pick some music? Well, we went looking for music from the gay community, and at that time, in about 76, we couldn't find anything that really would work with the visuals. So I thought, okay, well, there's nothing out there. We got to do something. And I've done a little music before, composed a few things on my own. And I thought of a dear friend of mine, Bob Gaston, who was a performer and who did write. I called Bob up and I told him the situation. Would he help me? And he said, sure. So we went and started working on music, on a theme. The theme was Come Out, the whole community coming out in many levels of that. So we came up with a song, Bob and his guitar and me doing some of the lyrics, and it was called Come Out, Come Out. We went to a small studio. We had put ads in the paper saying that we needed people from the community that were singers to do this special project. And they came. We had incredible talent, absolutely amazing talent from the community. We went to the studio, recorded it. I think it took about 2 hours, several takes. And we were thrilled. The air date came, and we were so excited. We had all the interviews. It was all live TV. And we showed the logo symbol I had designed. The people were amazing. They were talking about the services and the organizations newly available to the community in the tri-state area. And they played the song that was going in and out as they showed the visuals of these people holding hands in various sections of New York. And people started calling the studio, and they said, where can we get that soundtrack of Come Out, Come Out? Where do we get the song? So while the TV program was going on, they came to me in the studio and said, Nick, what do we tell them? And I thought for a second, and I thought, give me 5 minutes. And I thought about this, and I thought, well, I know Craig down in the Oscar Wilde Memorial Books store on Christopher Street in the Village. Called him up and said, Craig, if I had a song, would you be on records, would you be able to put it in your store, because it's mostly books? He said, I will, Nick, of course I will. So I called back, I went to the people, again, live in the studio, and I said, please tell them that it will be available in a couple of weeks at the Oscar Wilde Memorial Bookstore. Anyhow, I called up the next day in Philadelphia, where I knew they pressed records, and found a manufacturing company that would press the records. And at the time, in 1976, it was all 45s. Remember the 45 records? So they pressed, I think it was about 500. And we went to Craig and got them there. And they started selling. People were even calling the bookshop asking for it. And although we didn't become millionaires, we paid for all the expenses of the recording studio, of the advertising we had to do to get the performers, and pressing the records. And if I would come out even, I would be thrilled. Well, we did. And it was an amazing time creatively and as a gay activist in New York for me personally and for all the people that were connected with this project.
I want to again thank Nick Curto for that history, and the bookstore owner that Nick referred to was Craig Rodwell, a very noted gay activist, and they called the group on the 45 New Freedom. Here's Come Out, Come Out.
You thought that you were the only one, but there's millions like you when all is said and done. So walk with pride and hold up your head. Hiding in the closet is a long last day. Come on, come on, wherever you are. Freedom is here and there's no reason to fear. Sunshine again.
It's rare for me to play the same song on QMH more than once. And one of the reasons is that there's just so much music in our history that I want to cover, it's almost not fair to repeat a song. But this will mark the third time for this one, which should tell you how much I respect it. I played it on my very first Gay Pride show in June of 2000. The artist is Jimmy Worm, and I'm talking about his song, Stonewall. It came from his 1995 album, I Pledge. And this year he released a new CD called Last Chance. So it was the perfect chance to visit with him. I asked him this question: of what song that you've recorded are you the most proud?
I think probably of all of the songs that I've written, the one that is the most meaningful when I listen to it is probably Stonewall, just because it summarizes in my mind a lot of history. I think in that song for me, something in embracing who those people were helps me in some way appreciate really how easy I have it right now. You know, I'm here in Seattle and I can walk down any street holding my boyfriend's hand and it's, you know, I have really no worries at all. And I think back to where that started and how difficult it had to be to make those first moves. I don't know, the song just really, what I wanted it to be was a big thank you to those people who had to go through the really scary stuff for me to enjoy what I enjoy right now.
Stonewall, take a look around tonight. Take a look around tonight, you're gonna find your worth. Stonewall, if you stand up, you just might. If you shout out, you just might get your message heard. Stonewall, Dorothy's gone with her ruby shoes. Ain't nothing left to lose over this rainbow. Stonewall, bull dykes are in control. Drag queens are on a roll. The liberals will follow. And even when you're pushed aside, even when you're lost inside, they tied your tongues and bound your feet. But this world will still remember. Stonewall, I'm looking around tonight. I'm looking around tonight, I'm gonna find my worth. Stonewall, I've been hiding far too long. I've been thinking I'm not strong enough to be heard. Stonewall, you are my very soul. Repression takes its toll and I turn to you. Strength to win. Let the battling begin. Our waiting days are through. And even if I'm pushed aside, even if I'm lost inside, they can tie my tongue and bind my feet. But this world will still remember. Thank you.
From that same CD, please tell me about the song, I Pledge Rainbow Stripe Banner.
I was driving with a friend of mine to the Columbia River Gorge in Oregon, and we were just talking about politics, and I just kind of jokingly said, I think we need a new Pledge of Allegiance. I'm really tired of ours. I think we need one that fits us better. And we just started playing around just as a joke. And the more I thought about it, I really started enjoying it. When I got home, I started putting music to it. And it's kind of how I did the format of that CD, just from that little idea that it actually started out as a joke.
I Pledge Allegiance to the Flag. They stand. We're nation under God, very visible, with levity and safe sex for all. Oh, say, can you see in the dark? Pride in ourselves and our rainbow so bright, the value of each of its colorful stripes strengthens the whole as we fight for our lives. The laws they create, breeding violence and hate, strike fear in our hearts, but our flags do wave and know that banner will stay until all are free and peace is waged, until we are free and peace is
Again, both of those songs were from Jimmy Worm's 1995 album, I Pledge. And bringing things up to date, I'm very pleased to share with you this next recording, as I think it's very inspirational. In 2002, in Seattle, a chorus group was founded, and what made that notable is that this was the first Gay-Straight Alliance youth chorus. They called themselves Diverse Harmony, and this song, though not released commercially, was performed by them in concerts and on television. It's called Our World.
I'm going to go like this. I'm going to give you the one. We're going to go one, two, three.
Okay, everyone do something crazy.
Something else.
I got nobody else.
Okay. We're stopping on number nine.
I love to see. I love to see.
She must be on that.
Boy, do I need to practice.
And don't know anybody.
I came out to my best friend the other day, and now he won't return my phone calls.
Better dead than gay? What? Why doesn't anybody listen to me?
Why doesn't anybody listen to me? Nobody understands.
What are you looking at?
What are you looking at?
Nobody understands.
Am I normal?
There's nothing wrong with me.
I am not normal.
Not normal.
I am normal.
I wish my parents would get off my case.
Dad, lay off.
Could you just stay out of my personal life? I'm gay.
Things are so stressful at school.
My teachers are so boring.
I hate
hate school.
My teachers keep telling me that I'm not living up to my potential.
Why do I have to take math? I'm never going to use it.
I feel the weight of the world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder.
After I came out, I found this group of kids that liked me.
I finally found someone who loves me for me. Isn't that what it's all about?
Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity.
We have to change this.
I hate it when my voice cracks.
God, I'm fat.
I could kill for some junk food.
God, my butt is so big.
I like big butts, and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny.
Hello. Do you know when Christy will be back?
Is Mike there?
He's so cute.
He's so cute.
My mom thinks I'm too young to determine my sexual preference. Is she kidding me? I'm on the phone.
Will you tell Rose I called?
He's really pressuring me to have sex with him.
Oh, my God. She was so beautiful.
Do I have to tell you to knock
Shut up.
Before you enter my room?
Could you just stay out of my personal life?
I hate you.
I came out to my parents, and they don't want me living with them anymore. Can I stay at your house?
And I don't want them to see me, because I don't think that they understand. When everything's made to be broken, I just want.
I love my mom.
I love my mom.
I love singing.
I love basketball.
I love Josh Groban.
My parents just want me to be happy.
I know I can.
I know.
Be what I wanna be.
I'm grounded.
Grounded. Know what it is.
For the next 40 years. The basketball team.
That's hella tight.
I like totally spaced out.
I know.
I'm a boy.
Just because I sing doesn't make me gay. Just because I'm gay doesn't mean I sing.
Say good news to y'all.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Say good news
to y'all. Welcome to our world.
Welcome.
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 Say good news to y'all.
Welcome to our world.
Of course, that's the theme song from Will and Grace, and my tip of the hat to 8 very good years of queer television. And this is a good time to remind you to visit my website. If you do so while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night, Sunday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. This next music set will be very different, but then I warned you it would be that kind of show. I've been saving this song just so when I played it, I could say I was playing a recording that was 100 years old. It was written by one of America's greatest songwriters, Jerome Kern, and he published it in 1904, and it was a hit the next year for a female singer. In 1906, an artist named Billy Murray recorded it, and with a man singing it, well, it becomes quite gay. People didn't think twice about that in those days, but today, well, it belongs on my show. Remember, this was taken from a 100-year-old 78 RPM recording. Billy Murray and How'd You Like to Spoon With Me?
I don't know why I am so very shy. I always was demure. I never knew what silly lovers do. No flirting I'd endure. In all my life, I've never kissed a man. I've never winked my eye. But now, at last, I'm going to break the ice. So how do you like to try? to spoon with me? How'd you like to spoon with me? Sit beneath an old tree, large and shady. Call me little Susie, Woosie, baby. How'd you like to hug and squeeze? Dangle me upon your knees. How'd you like to be my lovey-dovey? How'd you like to spoon with me?
My heart said, and I am all forlorn. My man's treating me mean. I regret the day that I was born, and that man of mine I've ever seen. My happiness had never lasted a day. My heart is almost breaking while I say that. Good men, it's hard to find you. Always get the other kind. Just when you think that he's your pal, you find him fooling around with someone else. Then you rain, you even crave to see him laying in his grave. If your man is nice, take my advice. Hug him in the morning, hug him in the night. Give him plenty of loving, be sure you treat him right. For a good man, nowadays it's hard to find.
You're probably wondering, who on earth did we hear after Billy Murray? While it sounded like something from the 1940s or 1950s, especially with the Spike Jones-inspired sound effects, it was really from the year 2000. The song, A Good Man Is Hard to Find, came from a German act called Jerry Jenkins and His Band of Angels and their self-titled album. Up next is a gay artist who never released any recordings, but I sure wish he had. His name was Hank Barron. He grew up in New Jersey, and in 1977 he was living in Philadelphia. On May 13, 1977, along with Cassie Culver, he performed a benefit concert in Washington, D.C. for a gay radio show called Friends on the Pacifica station WPFW. The show was recorded, and I want to thank the folks at the Rainbow History Project in D.C. for providing me with a copy and allowing me to air songs from it. The first song is called Asking the Road and speaks of the anguish of gay teenagers. And a second song, called Ride 'em Cowboy, deals with the bar scene. Due to its lyrics, it's for my internet listeners only. Here's Hank Barron and unreleased music from 1977. Notice he mentions Anita Bryant in his intro.
And you know, Anita Bryant is saying that we recruit people, but nobody recruited me. I enlisted as quick as possible. It's a volunteer army, isn't it? Anyway, I grew up in Maple Shade, New Jersey. Now, when I got about 16 years old, which was like 10 years later, you could imagine I was feeling pretty horny at the time. Now, what do you do when you're in this situation? I had my parents repeat continually, watch out when you go hitchhiking. Please don't do it. You meet the strangest, weirdest kind of people when you're hitchhiking. So I said to myself, I gotta go hitchhiking. That's all there was, believe me. Anyway, this is a song about that, and it's called Asking the Road. Trapped inside a Smallville High, I wait each day for history. I'm screaming about the pretty boy who has the seat in front of me. Twice a week I go to a gym, and it always scares me half to death. Naked bodies in the showers, I shut my eyes and I hold my breath. If I ever was to touch someone that I want so much, he'd punch me out, he'd nail me to the wall, and I couldn't stand the shame, no, I couldn't stand the pain, so I'm not touching anyone at all, not at all. You see, I've learned that the road is the place I must go when there's someone that I'd like to meet. And I'm asking the road to show me the way, yeah, to the arms of somebody who's sweet. Somewhat sweet, yeah, yeah, somewhat sweet. Back at home when supper's done, I'm trying to make it to the door. Daddy spies my getaway and he gives me the third degree once more. Hold it, son, where are you going and why do you wear your pants so tight? Mama says, please stay at home, you can watch TV with us tonight. If they knew about their baby, they would think that I was crazy. They'd try to lock me in most every night So I tell them lots of lies, hoping that they don't get wise. But still I can't get out without a fight. It's such a fight. But I've learned that the road is the place I must go when there's someone that I'd like to meet. And I'm asking the road to show me the way, yeah, to the arms of somebody who's sweet. Somewhat sweet, yeah, yeah, someone sweet. When I finally make it out, I head down to the edge of town. I'm standing on Route 38 and I'm waiting to thumb somebody down. Someone stops to pick me up and all my hopes begin to rise. It's a man, he's alone. I open the door and I slip inside. Oh, I met a lot of men. They go cruising now and then, far away from their friends and families, their families. 'Cause there isn't any danger when you do it with a stranger, and that's why they all stop to pick up me. They pick up me. You see, I've learned that the road is the place I must go when there's someone that I'd like to meet. And I'm asking the road to show me the way, yeah, to the arms of somebody who's sweet. Somewhat sweet, yeah, yeah, someone sweet. Someone sweet, oh, someone sweet. Send me someone sweet. Send me someone sweet. Send me someone.
Well, you probably wouldn't expect me to play a song from 1973 by a teen pop duo, but this is no ordinary duo. They were known as the Williams Brothers, and as 14-year-old twins, they had the look and sound and family connections to get them some attention. Their father was a Hollywood manager, and their uncle was Andy Williams. From 1973, here's their version of the song, Secretly.
Why must I meet?
That particular song by them with some degree of irony. Flash forward to 1987 and the career of the Williams Brothers picked up again with the first of three albums for Warner Brothers. Their last album in 1993 was called Harmony Hotel. Okay, what's the gay connection? You know there's got to be one. Well, the Williams Brothers are Andy and David, and in 1994, in an interview with The Advocate, David Williams came out. As I mentioned, their 1993 album was called Harmony Hotel, and I just love the age-related song from it called Don't Look Now.
Don't look now. It's got nothing to do with you. Don't look now.
love he gave will one day return to him. One of these days was one day too late for him. If they could only find a cure. Friends of mine like Jim, I'll never see the likes of him. Don't look now, it's raining.
Williams Brothers. I'm down to the last song, and it's one I've been meaning to play for quite some time. But before I get to it, I want to thank you all for tuning into the show. I always enjoy doing one of these shows, as I get to share so many songs I've been meaning to play. And my internet listeners get to hear a much expanded version, which includes many more songs, including some that, due to lyrical content, are just not ready for regular radio. If you enjoyed this show, you want to know that I'm doing another chapter of it in August, sort of a part two of songs I've been meaning to play. I'll tell you why I'm skipping July in a moment. If you have questions or comments about any of the music I feature, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. And please check out my website, logically enough, at www.queermusicheritage.com, where you can see photos of the artists and recordings I've played tonight. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT Houston, and I'll be back on the fourth Monday of next month with another installment of Queer Music Heritage. On that show, I'll salute the winners of the Out Music Awards, held in New York City earlier this month. Now on to the last song. It's by one of our superstars, and has extra appeal to me as a collector because it's never been released by her in any form as an audio recording. It's from the wonderful 1996 documentary film Celluloid Closet, and it was used under the closing credits. Here's K.D. Lang and her terrific version of Secret Love.
Once I had a secret love, it lived within the world.
secret love became impatient to be free. So I told the friendly star the way
Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Networks station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. And don't forget to volunteer for Q Patrol, a nonprofit corporation running citizens' watch patrols in the Montrose to prevent hate crimes. It's fun, safe, and easy to do. Just call 713-528-SAFE. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The people of Cuba have suffered under a material aid embargo imposed by the United States for over a half century. The Cuba Solidarity Committee of Houston has fully supported the challenge of this blockade by supplying material aid, financial donations, and logistical support through the Pastors for Peace annual caravan to Cuba. The caravan arrives in Houston July 1st, and we need your donations. The caravan primarily focuses on delivering medical and educational supplies. Monetary donations are also urgently needed. Checks can be made out to Pastors for Peace. Donations can be dropped off at KPFT, Shrine of the Black Madonna, Shape Community Center, the First Unitarian Church. Please join us. Please donate. For more information, call 281-756-9663 or 832-860-6464. This is KPFT Houston. Venceremos.
Take a look through the eyes of Nobel laureate.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.